Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it's now or never. Either we do something about what's happening and the direction of this country, and it doesn't take every one of us. As a matter of fact, when you look at the revolution, it was actually prosecuted by 3 to 7%. Those are the estimates. Now, there may have been a little bit of support, but the majority of the country, you know, was pretty indifferent. I mean, life was okay for those people who were, you know, out farming and what have you. But those people who didn't like the taxes because they were the direct recipients of those taxes as the tea was coming in and so forth, they said, we're not going to take this. And as a matter of fact, in retrospect, to create the association, I've said this before, the tax level that they thought was intolerable and it was just unacceptable was 1% on these stamp acts. 1%. Or actually, somebody told me, I think it's 0.1%. So I'm going to go with 0.1% as far as, you know, actually actualizing that. I don't necessarily care, but the fact of the matter is it was so minute, it was so small, that they said that they would not tolerate that tax. And look at us today. What are you being taxed at? By the federal government, 20-some percent? What are you being taxed at by your state government? 10, 15, 20, adding all the other little taxes in your life, another 5 or 10% for your sales tax, these little excise taxes, taxes on your gas. Shoot, look at the cost of gas and the percentage or how many cents come out of every gallon. I mean, currently, you're probably looking at almost a dollar in the average for most states for the excise taxes on gasoline. And here's the question. Why is it that all of a sudden these states want to give all of these subsidies to these electric vehicles? Well, that's because the federal government is pushing this down their throat. But if these cars aren't paying any taxes into the roads, improvements and maintenance and support and so forth, then what are they doing? They want trucks to be able to do this too? Folks, we're being played and we're being driven because they don't care about the end results. They care about controlling, because what's the advantage of an electrical car? Well, you can't go far. Let's look at it this way. The one kind of car that they don't want you to have is one that runs on water. Why? Because it falls from the sky and there's an endless supply. I mean, 2/3 of the earth is covered with water. So if you thought about it, well, what is water? Well, water's hydrogen and oxygen. Oh, yeah. So hydrogen is a very excellent fuel source. Excellent. As a matter of fact, you can convert your average car. It doesn't take much. As a matter of fact, I think the Mythbusters even prove this, that it does not take much to actually convert a car from a regular combustion engine, whether it be gasoline, diesel, or what have you, to burning hydrogen. There's just a few minor little changes, but that's up front. I mean, in the long run, you probably have to change your exhaust and some other things because your exhaust is going to be steam as you basically ignite the hydrogen as it mixes with oxygen. It's going to create this steam. So you're probably going to have some rust in your exhaust system unless you change it out. But the point of the matter is that the government doesn't want us to have that. And when you really look at it, the one thing that would get rid of the EPA or at least everybody's concerns about petrol, or I should say fossil fuels, why isn't, I've said this before, the reason why they do not want this is because then they can't control you. And if you really look at it, it seems like government has taken a hostile attitude towards those who are successful. In the old days, government, as a matter of fact, FDR's position was that the government needed to help you be productive. So he created these public utilities, and all unconstitutional, but he went down this path and spent tax dollars on creating all of these different, you know, the Tennessee Valley Authority and all of these different public utilities so that everybody could start getting electricity. Continuing down that path, we should be at a point today where we're not paying by the gulp or by the kilowatt. We should be paying just for a subscription of service, because those plants have to be burning 24/7. The problem is that as they, you know, moved this public utility forward, everybody says, oh, we need to privatize that. And now there's a lot of people making bank off of what government basically told you was an essential service that you needed. And now everybody's so hooked on electricity and paying these exorbitant prices for no good reason at all. But we'll have to get into that once we get through some Republic Review stuff. As a matter of fact, if you go to, and I'm just going to mention this real quick, if you actually go to the Moby Strip press page, and I think it's the status on the books, if you look there, you should find yourself the four or five books that I was planning on writing once we started moving forward with Republic Review. One of those is to completely change our electrical, or I should say, our energy strategy. And there are very important things that we have to start doing to get away from actually paying corporations and people all of these exorbitant prices just for you to be able to produce something. They are getting so good at taking away your, let's call it disposable income, right? Because you got so much money going for your house. And I've already said, if you look at how much money goes for energy today, for your gas, your natural gas, your vehicle gas, your electricity, all of these different things just on energy alone, you will probably come up with this fact that that's probably your number three biggest expense out of the average household. In the old days, it was in the sauce. Now, it wasn't one third of your time chopping wood and those types of things, but that's what you had to do. If you used, you know, wood for fuel for heating your home and that type of stuff, and lights, no, back in those days, they probably used candles and or kerosene and petroleum products as those were being developed in the late 1800s. The point is, folks, that we have moved to a point where government is now playing with what little bit we have left of our disposable income. And with hyperinflation, they're going to take the last of it. And this is all unconstitutional. How much are you going to take? That every indication is proving that the federal government and the global government are out to create a world of hurt in your life. Why is it that you're not doing enough? Or maybe you're not doing anything. I know there's people that listen, and there's, you know, there's a high probability, because I do know that there's a lot of people that listen that never call or they never communicate because, I don't know if they just like hearing my voice because of streaming or what have you. Red State Talk Radio is, I believe, the number one talk radio in all of the different talk radios out there. And so with all of the people that we have and with all of the different listeners and so forth, that, and not just this show, but Red State Talk Radio, there are some of these shows, and because I talked to Scott Adams about his show, and he has his regulars. And so there's some people, every once in a while he gets somebody new, but these regulars are people that just like coming on the show and, you know, and talking and so forth. The problem that we see, though, is that there's hardly anybody that calls. That's probably because, and the typical indication is, because I talk to a lot of people that have and teach and know a lot about the Constitution, most people just listen. They are probably afraid to ask the silly question. But how many people, how many of you have ever heard that the silly question or the stupid question is the one unasked? And so I think there's an adage for that. There's something that says you ask a dumb question and you are, you know, laughed at for a minute or what you're seen as a fool for a minute. But if you never ask the dumb question, you will be the fool for the rest of your life. And so if you have any questions, give us a call, 425-270-5416. I know I cover a lot of crap. A lot of important crap. I hate to call it crap, but there's just a lot of little things that, and what we're going through right now is just, what kind of government do we really have? Do you understand government and how our government is laid out? You have to start understanding these things so that you don't get caught up in this polarization of left and right, because there's really no such left and right. What we have is liberty and subjugation. If you want to consider the right being liberty and subjugation being the left, enslavement, okay. But it is not about necessarily left and right as far as values, mores, and so forth. When it comes to government, there is no morality. I mean, if you want to talk about an institution or an entity that is about as immoral as they can be or amoral, well, that's typically government. When we come back, we'll get through some obligatories and we're going to get into some feedback, and then we will actually get into where we left off regarding government. So with that, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get through some obligatories, and then we can kind of do just a little bit of feedback. Okay, so timbernation.com, pretty self-explanatory, timber, wood, hardwood. Most people think of timber as, you know, the tall evergreens and so forth, and that's really a softwood. These hardwoods are actually things like oak, walnut, hickory, maple, mahogany, and or like zebra wood, ebony, and there's a lot of the woods out there. But for the most part, Timber Nation has access to, and you could probably get the exotic stuff, but you're going to pay a very pretty penny for it. Now, if you go to timbernation.com, you'll actually find this thing called Tiger Stripe Maple for your entertainment center, for desks or what have you. It kind of has this, you know, this optical illusion effect where you've got the grain running one way and then you've got these other stripes that are running the other way. I don't know the technical word for what that is and how, you know, why it creates that look, but it is, to me, it is one of those things that route. It gives it a three-dimensional look. I've always personally liked walnut and the really tight, dark woods, or even the contrast, because walnut can have a really good contrast to it, where you kind of have a blonde look as well as a dark brown. And so when I look at walnut, and especially when it's been freshly oiled and it's got a good luster to it, you can almost, you know, see some depth to the wood. Anyway, Timber Nation is a hardwood custom order furniture store or furniture producer. So check them out if you've never looked at really different types of ways of having an entertainment system and start looking at it. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the entertainment systems he has there, this might be a little pricey as far as the electronics go. But the furniture costs the same, and it's about the same as you're going to pay out in town. Look at the 2-inch thick plates. I mean, these are planks that you could actually convert into building the beams and so forth. Anyway, this stuff is awesome. Go check it out, timbernation.com. Fortitude Financial Coaching. If you're ready to get disciplined on your spending money and your finances and taking control of the direction of your life financially, call Gary Smith with Fortitude Financial Coaching. Keith Broder's offers from the Constitution Club. Now, we used to promote his Constitution Club, but for the most part, he's gone down this path of actually trying to reach out to, I'll just say, school boards, government, and so forth to start teaching civics and to start teaching, giving some of his classes. If you go to constitutioneducation.us, you'll probably find a bevy of different ways of teaching the Constitution. Check it out and start sharing some of that education, because one of America's real problems is its illiteracy regarding its Constitution. Radio Dust Covers, radiodustcovers.com. If you have electronics, it's worth protecting. It's worth having some good dust covers for them when you turn them off. And finally, AdLocal. AdLocal out of Michigan actually can basically create the World Wide Web and the virtual world anywhere for you. They can help you do your hosting. They can help you do your domain maintenance, a lot of other things. Now, one of the things that I want to bring up, because there are certificates and there are reasons why you want to have SSL certificates for your website, because then Google will list you as a secure site. I'm here to tell you that there's a lot of independence. If you go to my website, it'll say this is not a secure website, but there is no external links. If you see an external link other than the ones I put up that are sending you to Orlene Kolk's books, her bookstore, or to Douglas Gibbs' Pistachio, or what is it, Political Pistachio, and some of these other things, such as, you know, Financial Fortitude Coaching or Fortitude Financial Coaching. When you look at those links will actually take you there. What you want to do, regardless of where you are, if you don't know, when you're looking at a link, you need to put your cursor over the link. And then at the very bottom of your browser, it'll tell you what that URL or what that link is going to send you. You can look at a link. This is how they trick you. You can look at a link that actually has regular language that says, okay, we're going to take you to timbernation.com. Those are the words you see. But then all of a sudden, you know, it'll be, you know, the dark web hacking, you know, emporium or something like that. in the lower window, because there's actually the subtext behind that link that when you click it, it doesn't send you to Timber Nation, it sends you to a bad spot. So that's how you can really tell when you're on a website that is says it's not secure, but you know it is. Double check for yourself on the links. If the link isn't an internal link or it's going external, if the language is the same, then you're good to go. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because Reagan.com email service, and there's a lot of other email services that are very aggressive in blocking independent domains. I have independent domains. And so anybody that has Reagan.com, if you email me, I will not ever be able to email you back, period. Reagan.com will not allow it to happen. Even if I just reply, it won't happen because they are very aggressive against independent. Now, so why do you think they're doing this? Well, if you want to control and you want to basically say, we're only going to let Google, Gmail, and these, that means that you're being tracked. If you're looking at these types of email services, then those types, Yahoo, MSN, though, you're being tracked by these large corporations. I tell people, set up your own email, become an independent, create a domain with your own name. And then for the rest of your life, I mean, I think you pay maybe $20 a year out of your pocket to have the domain, and then the email services are free. You don't even have to have web hosting. You don't even have to have web hosting. All you need is a domain and then the services. And I need to transition over to AdLocal, because AdLocal will give that to you. But when you look at, you know, my emails, I kind of use a different email provider. I should say ISP. I use a different ISP, infrastructure services provider. So anywho, the reason I want you to understand this is because they're trying to cast a dark cloud on independence, which most, if you look at it, most conservatives are independent, and the people that get affected, because we don't have big business. I mean, you go to BLM, it doesn't say it's insecure. And if there's anybody that would have nefarious intent, I mean, there's actually involved with the Chinese communists and so forth, you would think that those would have potential problems, malware, what have you. As a matter of fact, I never understood why a company, and I'm really going down a rat hole, but I've never understood the reason why a company thought it would be a good business model to harm people. You know, you go to their website, next thing you know, you're in a tornado, or you, all of a sudden you get a virus, or all sorts of bad. Why? Why do they do that? Why would they create a website that would just launch nothing but windows? There's a reason why browsers actually block any pop-up windows now, because it was so bad. Why would a company do something when they know the sentiments of the people that, you know, are cruising and exploring the web, you know, don't like those types of things? Why would they do that, other than the fact that, I don't know, they're just testing to see how much more malicious they can be. Anyway, again, our call in line, 425-270-5416. Boy, I'm sorry I went down that path. Now, one of the things that I wanted to get into, this is kind of a feedback thing, because I've had this conversation, and this kind of went down this path because you hear me rail on the convention estates. You know, folks, the problem is not that we need more amendments and we need to give the federal government more guidance. They're not following the guidance they have. Our real problem is a failure to actually, you know, comply to the Constitution. So our focus has to be obtaining compliance. So here's my, you know, my two cents on this. When you really want to see some tangible changes, you know, if you look at what the federal government is doing in noncompliance and the change that is being presented in front of you, whether that be a balanced budget, whether that be term limits, whether that be, and here's one, rescinding the 16th Amendment. Okay, so just remember that based on the current Constitution, it requires three-fourths of the states, 38 states, to ratify. Now, that's a huge barrier. That's a threshold that is hard to get to. The framers understood this. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of time. I mean, look at the convention states. I kind of mentioned this, you know, to this person I was talking to. And I'll tell you what, I love people that are calling me, talking to me about these types of things because they're starting to get it. And actually, those people are the ones that are actually putting a lot of energy, that needed energy, into this process in your local community. So in other words, it really should be you doing this as well. But anyway, when we come back, I'll finish on this. But in talking to this gentleman, we kind of went down the different paths of, you know, the convention states and so forth. And so I want to give you the most important part right when we come back.
Claiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I'm going to try to slow down a little bit so that I can be a little more coherent because sometimes I'm trying to speak about three, four things at once. So I tell you all the time who has jurisdiction. As a matter of fact, when we went through this lawsuit earlier this week for Monday through Wednesday, and we covered precisely what the jurisdiction of the federal court system is, anything within the Constitution. Now, are there elections, how the state runs elections, what they're doing, and the shenanigans of voters, election fraud, and those types of things, is that within the Constitution? No. The only thing is the voters' eligibility. They have to be you. The only thing, other than the Article 1 and Article 2 talking about who is supposed to do it, and that Congress has the power to basically declare when the election will occur, and they have some other minute powers, the overall elections belong to the states. They're the responsible agent here. So when it comes to election fraud, you know, this Dominion system that the states used, that is not a federal issue. The states actually have to go and resolve these problems themselves before they can even think about going to the federal government. And I'm telling you, every time you go to the federal government over something that they have no jurisdiction on, they quickly say, well, we want to take jurisdiction over this. What was the first thing Congress did after the election and with all of these different lawsuits? They wanted to change the process and take control of all elections, nationalize elections, because these states are going down this path. So the question is, do you think these states understand what they're doing in opening the door for the federal government to come in and usurp these powers? I think so. I honestly think that when you look at the people behind this, the facade is they're telling their people, we're going to go fight this. But the reality is the federal government is going to actually consume this. They're going to eat this up. They have no business doing that. Now, so as I've told you, the reason I'm going down this path is if it is within the Constitution, then the federal government has jurisdiction. Now, do you trust the federal courts? I don't. You may prove it to me that they're worthy of trusting because they are constantly getting it wrong. As a matter of fact, even this latest ruling regarding mandates and so forth, the only thing that they said was OSHA can't mandate this, but they clearly left it to the states. They don't even recognize the 14th Amendment's Privileges and Immunities Clause. So the fact of the matter is, you can't trust the courts. You can't trust the federal courts. I tell lawyers this all the time. Every time you walk into a federal court, you walk through their doors and into their court, you have surrendered your sovereignty, especially on an issue that they have no jurisdiction on. So what do? Well, you have to take this to the states, and the states have to actually come together and unite. This is the whole process of republic review, uniting on forcing the federal government into compliance. And because if they're causing a problem, they're not the court that has the jurisdiction over it, especially if they're causing a problem on something they have no jurisdiction on. So when we look at the pile of stuff and the problems that we have, do you really think another amendment is going to do this? No. If you go into a convention of states, you know, and if you really believe that this term limits, a lot of people are saying, we need term limits. What a fool. If you understand some of the greatest politicians that we've ever had, well, they would never have become great politicians because term limits. What we would have is we would have a very inexperienced and a very gullible government that could easily be, you know, overran and hoodwinked into believing that, oh, yeah, you can do this and you can do this. And believe us, we're telling you. And the courts over here, they'll guide you because they're in the tank with whatever the agenda is, because it seems like they've been driving the agenda since 1803. Yes, 1803 is when they started driving the agenda with John Marshall. So back to the real problem that most people don't see is if you create a convention of states and all of a sudden there's these little problems that the federal government or others start to induce, who has jurisdiction? Now you see the general government can actually come in, or the court system can actually come in and start ordering, either getting involved, regulating, managing, and or perverting the process. Here's the real problem. When we look at the contract and contract law, because the contract being the Constitution, contract law has this little old term, it's called collateral estoppel. And collateral estoppel does not allow a big organization, and technically collateral estoppel is typically used against the government because the government and our big corporations, which have these huge, you know, I'll just say reservoirs of lawyers and so forth, they descend upon you and sue you for this and sue you for this and sue you for this. And you breach a contract here, breach a, and next thing you know, you're being torn apart in the legal system by the government or whomever you have that contract with, that big corporation, as a subcontractor to them, they shred you apart. Collateral estoppel is something that protects that small entity, and it will also protect the government or the big entity when they perceive that you're coming down at them in different directions. So if all of a sudden we had Republic Review and then a convention of states at the same time or vice versa, well, the federal government could actually say, hey, you know, this, you know, we're being picked apart by the states here. They're teaming up on us. And this is where the federal government, because the Convention of States is actually under the jurisdiction, because it's within the Constitution, right there in Article 3, Section 2, then we can be pulled into a court process. And then all of a sudden, it could actually eliminate, well, we're not going to recognize this Republic Review thing. The only thing you can do is this. And this is how they usurp authority. It is clear that the only tribunal that can deal with things that are not within that Constitution that the federal government is violating is the states, because it is their compact. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I noticed is that some of the states are actually put into their state constitution that they are inseparable from the union. In other words, they are subjugated. They are enslaved to the union. What? That is a violation. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the origins of these types of things inserted into the Constitution, you will find that these were, let's say, crib notes. These were messages that the federal government made sure that some of these later states started injecting into their states. In other words, into their state constitutions, I mean. And so when we start looking at the old constitutions of New York, and we look at the newer constitutions of like Oklahoma and so forth, they put that language in there, and that language has to go. This is one of the reasons why I'm a huge advocate for rewriting. If you want to have a convention of states, start cleaning up the state constitutions. Get them in line with the U.S. Constitution, that the U.S. Constitution is only supreme over those enumerated powers, and that is it. They can't dictate anything else. Just do that, and the states will start actually standing up. They'll actually start creating these lines to say to the federal government, you can't do anything outside that Constitution, which would actually beg for forcing them into compliance, or beg them for Madison and Jefferson's interposition, which is another way of saying Republic Review. So let me move into the forms of government, because we talked about the different forms of government. There's monarchies, there's theocracies, right? There's a democracy. That's a form of government. There's a republican form of government. But the republican form of government doesn't actually tell you the type of government it is. It could be a monarchy as a republican form of government, or like a dictatorship. If you look at the Chinese Communist Party and their elections for that nation, you will find that they actually use a democracy and they have a dictator. So there's this election that occurs. I mean, they're having elections in Hong Kong all the time. It doesn't mean that it's truly a representative government, but that is our form of our government. They don't have necessarily, I think the Soviet Union actually had the Politburo and they had representation, but the representation was basically inept, or impotent. Because they didn't have any power. They weren't the sovereigns. The sovereigns were either the bureaucracy created by the dictator or what have you, just like King George. King George had most all the power. Parliament had barely any power at all. Some of the parliament's job was to just make sure that the taxes were coming in to keep the king fat and happy. So when we look at the forms of governments, we have to start looking at what kind of government. If you look at the nation or the nations like the EU, that is a republic where all of the different states step into a union of equality. But in the EU, it really wasn't equal, because there were kingpins like Britain that was dictating what was going to be happening in the EU, because this is what they needed. And this is why they're leaving, because it started becoming more of a democratic, everybody being equal, and they recognized that they were the ones that were the enemies, that they were going to be torn apart. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I hopefully this is about as clear as mud. Let's focus on the unifying of the governed, because when you look at, you know, immature nations or nations just starting off or the government just beginning, people usually create some form of government over their local vicinage or vicinity. And so when we look at the, you know, the early days, there were either monarchs or there was a democracy, or, and democracy is typically a rudimentary government. It is a basic government where, okay, we can all agree that we all have equal say and majority rule. So that becomes mob rule. And after a while, people start realizing that, you know, there's a lot of people that are becoming the victims from government. And so, you know, they start changing that so that more people would be, you know, protected. And they get to a point where they really start protecting the minority. Well, that's really what the framers did. They created a government that would not allow mob rule to actually create victims within America. They went out of their way to ensure that the minority always had some level of protection. And so some of the ways of doing that was to make sure that you had to have a supermajority to change the Constitution or what have you. So when we look at how these governments that are being formed and they get to a point where they create a state and or a nation, like what the colonists were, that basically they had Virginia and all these different states, they were, as they broke away their in independence from the king and from Britain, they became independent and sovereign states. And that's how the king recognized them, as independent and sovereign states. And so as they said, you know what, we need to unite to keep these other bad nations from taking advantage of us and dividing and conquering and so forth, they understood the power of unification. Remember, I just said dividing them, because divide and conquer is a typical tool to destroy somebody or your enemy that you want to destroy. If you look at how divided we are, boy, we're really somebody's enemy, right? Because we're being divided in so many different ways. Everybody talks about it, but nobody talks about unifying. This is why you'll find that all of these groups that are going out and saying, well, this is the problem. The problem is the federal government has no business doing what they're doing. Nobody will argue that. But when it comes down to the end of the day, they will do everything they can to maintain their relevance for their myopic issue. The old myopic issue is, you know, the John Birch Society or the Convention of States, or, you know, because the John Birch, we're going to educate our way out of this. Well, sorry, that's not going to do it. You actually have to lead, and you need to pull leaders together and start uniting them on the grounds of the Constitution and give them everything they need so that they can actually engage the government. So in other words, getting the states together, giving them the information and helping them, actually definitizing what the federal government should be doing and forcing them into that, or interposing the federal government into full compliance. So, as we've created these states, now what do you do with these states? Now, there's a couple of different ways you can create a republican form of government, and we've talked about this. Federation or confederation. Those are the two types. And so a confederation means that you have a general government with very limited powers. In a federation, you actually create, just like the Roman Empire or, you know, other types of empires like the Egyptian Empire or the German Empire, where the, and actually in Germany, this is what Hitler had to do. He had to get the states who still had a lot of power. Go read Mein Kampf. It's right there in Mein Kampf that the states had to surrender some of their sovereignty to the national government. And as soon as they did, Hitler ran with it. And everybody loved what Hitler was doing until all of a sudden they realized it was once again them against the world. And so, you know, Hitler was actually delivering. He had a brilliant strategy in trying to divide and conquer Europe and creating a much larger Germany. I mean, look at France. France completely capitulated when they came across the mountains. Okay, so when you have these different states and all of a sudden they start being molded in like what Germany was doing, they became not an independent state, they became a subjugated state. And all states were subjugated to the federation. So when you have a federal government, technically, when you look at Germany, he created a federation where the national government had all of the power, period. If you look at the USSR, the national government had all the power. China, same thing. You got all these different provinces. The national government has all the power. Anybody that says America is a federation or it's federalism, then they completely have perverted the concept of what the framers had done. Because we have a very limited and defined general government. They can't get into labor. They can't get into housing. They can't get into energy. They have no business meddling with health care, Social Security, retirement, whatever you want to call it. I mean, all of these different issues out there are not within their jurisdiction. So, in other words, we actually have a confederation with a limited, so we're more confederate than we are federal. But when it comes to war, national defense, and everybody working together in that aspect for the betterment and for the general defense and welfare of the Union for national security purposes, we do come together. We do empower the federal government. However, when you read, like, I forget what Federalist Paper number it is, but I know Madison kind of points out that the federal government is external. Their focus is on the external things regarding the republic. In other words, our trade, our emissary, or our, you know, foreign affairs, our, you know, how we deal with these different nations, as well as national defense. They have no business dealing with domestic laws. If you read the resolutions, which some of you haven't done, but I know you really need to go, and you've got to read Jefferson's Kentucky resolutions of 1798, as well as Virginia's resolutions of 1798, December 1798, and you will find that the federal government only has jurisdiction over crime, over four types of crimes: treason, counterfeiting, and when we look at the other two crimes, they really are crimes that occur overseas or outside the boundaries of the United States. One of them is crimes committed on the high seas, crimes or misdemeanors, and laws that are broken against the laws of nations. In other words, you're outside the United States and you're in another nation and you violate their laws. So crimes committed against the laws of nations is an external. One of the things that I want to bring out of this is because there's organizations out there that are huge advocates for this thing called the Sovereign Citizen Movement. The Sovereign Citizen Movement claims that the United States basically subjugated you after, because they called everybody a U.S. citizen in the 14th Amendment. If you go read the Constitution, U.S. citizens was defined in Article 4 with the Privileges and Immunities Clause, as well as the jurisdiction of all U.S. citizens within Article 1, Section 8. So how is it that they created it then, and what you read in the 14th Amendment is something even different? That was that they're misleading you, because they want you to just read the 14th Amendment, but nobody's going to read, because it jumps out of the Constitution. Go get the Constitution in a Word document and just search it for citizen. And you will find that citizen's actually in there a few times. U.S. citizens. So anyway, when we look at how these republics are formed, then we can understand that we create these governments. And in our case, we have a confederation with a general government. Kind of a federation confederation, but it's more of a confederation than a federation or a federal government. And so when we look at it that way, we also have a political system that allows different politics to come forward. However, the Constitution really doesn't allow for politics. Where in the Constitution does it say if you can get, you know, all of the legislators between, you know, the different parties to all agree on a compromise, then you can change the powers that the federal government has? No, it doesn't allow that. In other words, the parties have convinced you that, because how many times have you ever heard, well, you know, government's job is to, you know, to basically find compromise in governing us. No, that's when they have general powers. They don't have general powers. What they have is enumerated powers. So if they're going to get engaged, or if they're going to create a law that is actually coming, you know, after something that is not enumerated, but they've compromised and they all say, yeah, we're going to have this healthcare system. When Obamacare came out, there were 29 states, and had those states united at that point, they would have been able to get rid of Obamacare. And actually, that would have been, I believe, the tip of the iceberg that would have got them to get rid of a lot of other things, and they should have pursued that. But instead, they basically changed their tune, and then the Trump song was repeal and replace. Are you kidding me? They have no authority to do this. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.